Greetings, aliens. It is me, your one and only host, Ella Sanchez of the Nadie Preguntó podcast, because truly no one asked for this podcast. But wow, this episode, this has so much into it. Before I get into that, you know the drill. If you're new here, hi, how are you? What took you so long? You have a lot of catching up to do, all right? You have a lot of episodes you can listen to right now. And if you're tuning back in, then welcome. Hi, how are you? I hope that you're doing well. I hope that you're being safe. I hope that you're doing good things. I hope that you're having a good week, or, you know, just wrapping up a good week, or maybe it wasn't a good week and you're just waiting for the next week. Maybe it's going to be better. And I hope it is. Who knows? But, you know, you read the title. We're going to get into it right now. And honestly, before we get into it, I will always start with a disclaimer, because you read it. It's a pretty heavy topic for today. I am not a medical professional. I am not a gynecologist, nor am I a doctor of any kind, nor do I claim to be in any capacity. But I did do a lot of research on the history of some birth control methods I will be including today. This will be mentioning menstruation. This will be mentioning death. This will be mentioning just like kind of the ugly sides that very few pharmaceutical companies, which, by the way, I'm a huge hater of big pharma. Hate me if you want, I guess. I don't really fuck with them. They have too many lawsuits in their closet for me to really be on board with what the shit they're doing. So with that being said, I am on birth control. I feel like I am the one that can speak on this. Several other people on birth control can as well. All of their opinions are valid, and the discovery and research and development of birth control as a whole, and is a beautiful yet crazy yet really dangerous field to be playing around with. However, I know that there's doctors and gynecologists and scientists out there that truly have the best interest at heart for the people that are truly going on birth control for various reasons. And there are some that I really don't fuck with, like Big Pharma. So without further ado, we're going to get into it. You already heard my disclaimer. I am innocent here. I am just here to make a safe space for people on birth control to feel like they're not alone in this, because I am very passionate about birth control and women's issues and just anything about women in general. Because honestly, I just wish I could explain what it's like to live in this all the time. And people are, and especially men, they like want to understand. Like, for men that actually do give a shit, they want to understand. And I just wish they could. So I hope that this episode is for the men that are listening and want to understand the shit that women go through daily, if not probably worse than I do, and unfortunately have passed, and at the hands of Big Pharma and at the hands of many other people of birth control. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. And I hope you enjoy this information. And sit back, relax. There's no need to panic. We're going to panic together, if anything. And yeah, I hope you enjoy. And we're back to our regular scheduled programming. So hello, hi. You heard my disclaimer in the beginning, you know. I thought I'd reiterate in shorter words that, yes, once again, I am not a medical professional. I am not a gynecologist, nor am I a doctor of any kind. I am not a scientist, though I wish I was, so I could understand all the chemicals I just read about regarding birth control. Now listen, look, I will be only talking about four methods of birth control today. I will be talking about the birth control pill. I will be talking about the IUDs, both hormonal and non-hormonal ones. I will be talking about the birth control shot, and I will be talking about, last but not least, the birth control, oh my God, wait, the birth control IUD shot pill and the implant. The implant. Okay, I know what you're thinking. Oh my God, Gabby, like, how do you not know this? I am trying my best. Okay, so before we begin with all the methods I picked out, I chose these four methods because, one, they're the most popular I've seen commercials for, advertisements for, and just they're the most popular I've met within women amongst the market. I feel like those were the four common ones. But yeah, I mean, there are other birth control methods out there. But before I begin, it's not, you know, I can't go out on this episode without explaining my inspiration for this episode, because I have a lot of information of shit I researched, and honestly, it's 19 pages of long. I don't know how long this episode is going to be, and I really don't want to make it 2 hours, even though I could talk about this for maybe all of my life if you asked me to. I take birth control and women's issues very seriously, as you can literally tell from this own podcast as my own. Like I said in the beginning, all experiences from any person on birth control is very valid and valuable in all its capacity and its form, because it's still considered a form of research based on experience. So that's just a personal opinion. That is not a medical opinion. That is my opinion from what I see. And also, lastly, my inspiration for this episode was just kind of sudden. I don't know. I just couldn't think of anything. And I actually wanted to do more research about birth control, because something about birth control, I know that a lot of medical professionals out there really advertise it if you really want to get on it. And I'm a big believer in it as well. It's just that something about birth control, and primarily this episode is mainly hyper focusing on preventing pregnancy as a reason of birth control. I am not going to be discussing any other reason for birth control that can be used, which, by the way, birth control can be used for other reasons, not just avoiding or preventing pregnancy, or just kind of mapping out your future with your future spouse, or just what you plan to have in the future if you do plan on having children in your future. Not me, though. You guys stay safe. But my point is that, truthfully, that's what it's for, you know? This episode will primarily focus on the preventing pregnancy aspect of birth control as a whole, and that is all I can really say. But the inspiration was very sudden, just kind of occurred to me. I'm also currently on my period, as I am suffering on my period with a copper IUD. Yes, that is a birth control that I have, and I will always make it a PSA as much as I can. Any opportunity I get that's presented to me to talk about it, I will talk about it. And here I am with 19 pages worth of shit I just looked up, and I am tired, my eyes hurt. But we are here, and we are gonna have a good time, but kind of a scary time. But it's not meant to be scary, you know? I don't want people to get scared, because truthfully, although this is all true and the lawsuits and everything, it is very, well, not minimal, because I did see more than 3,000 cases and lawsuits per birth control method I researched. So it is alarming, you know, but amongst the millions of women that use it, 3,000 is very minimal compared to millions of women that use it daily or as a form of birth control as it is. So it's also still rare, you know? It's not something that will happen to you, will happen to me, will happen to someone maybe, which really fucking sucks. But it's not as common as we think it is, even though the media really likes to push it under the rug with the lawsuits, you know? But honestly, Big Pharma can suck my fucking dick and choke on it, so thanks for that. But yeah, so I'm just ranting at this point, kind of, just with research this time. And yeah, like I said, I don't know how long this is. And if I see that I'm almost at an hour and I'm not halfway done, too bad. We're going to just breeze through it. I'm going to try to be as quick as I can, because your girl is tired. And also, she has work tomorrow. And also, this is a lot of information for a person to take in, unless you are really mentally prepared to hear about all the shit I found, which, by the way, is very accessible via google.com and medical journals and peer-reviewed articles and all of that. It's out there. It's not as heavily searched as other people think it is. It really should be. And finally, before I start with my research and everything I've gathered, I've always been kind of just common sense, just kind of being able to tell just truly by common sense that birth control in any form is quite literally dangerous, because you're preventing your body from doing something it's meant to, which is really hard to say. Like, I don't agree with that, and I hate to even realize that's also my life being on birth control. It's the truth. Like, it doesn't matter if there's zero hormones in it, you're still preventing something that's meant to happen. Like, if you get, or no, if you are during your ovulation cycle and you get pregnant, or you are accidentally getting pregnant if you're on birth control, your birth control attacking your body, like what it's meant to do, the egg killing the sperm, however way you choose in any birth control contraceptive, is quite literally going against your own nature. It sucks. I hate it. I hate to even agree. And it's hard for me to even say, and it's harder for me to even hear, but it's the truth. All birth control really sucks. It's a beautiful and effective creation that I am thankful for and I will use. But at the end of the day, we can read all the negative side effects. We can read all the lawsuits. We can read all of it all online. And it's all true. Like, it has happened before. It's continuously happening worldwide, amongst women worldwide, on different kinds of birth control contraceptives, because you're going against your own nature of having a child. Like, literally, you may not even want it, but your body is going to do that. Like, anatomically speaking, reproductively speaking, it's going to attempt to do it. Oh, boom, you're having sex on your, like, during your ovulation. Oh my God, wow. Your body's gonna be like, oh, okay, we're making a child now. Even though you're not saying that, your body is. And that's where it sucks, because then you're on birth control. That's like literally preventing you from doing the thing you're meant to do, as your body just naturally does it, you know? It sucks. It's horrible to hear. But without further ado, let's get into today's episode. And honestly, this is just meant to shed light on the negative impacts of birth control methods as a whole. And if you don't really want to hear that, I get it. You know, it's a very negative vibe, but I don't really want to come off as negative. I'm just trying to put out what's already out there. Like I said, you could Google all of this information. I will be providing a really long, you know, works cited, if you will, annotated bibliography, if you will, in the description of this episode, where you can click all the links I found and read for yourself if you choose not to believe me for some reason. I don't know. As I said, not a medical professional or a gynecologist of any kind. But if you want to do your own research on the side, aside from what I have seen and I'm going to say today, go for it. The links I found are pretty good, and they have even references at the bottom so you can even read further into what we're about to talk about. And there's no need to be frightened in any way, you know. We're just talking about the realistic aspect of birth control. It's a very touchy subject, which it shouldn't be, because how are you a man and against it? I don't know. Honestly, my personal opinion is men are against birth control until they get a girl pregnant by accident, so I don't really want to hear it, honestly. And I'm not going to argue with a man about birth control and abortion. I'm just not going to do it. You will lose that conversation, I promise you. As you can tell, I am pro-choice, duh, like literally, for other reasons aside from birth control, I am pro-choice. And honestly, I will not argue with a man, a straight man, if you will, on that topic. So honestly, if you're going to come at me, you're wrong. Sorry, I don't want to hear it. And I don't care what kind of argument you have prepared. I don't want to hear it, nor do I care. And yeah, like I said, I think I've gotten everything out of the way. So without further ado, we're actually getting serious. So sit back, relax, grab yourself a nice cup of tea, cup of coffee. Maybe you're listening to this on your way to work. I don't know where you are listening to this, but I hope that it resonates with you somehow. And so we begin. So the birth control arm implant, just the basics on getting to know it. Like I said, I have four methods, the most popular methods of birth control on here, and I will be mentioning them for their history and side effects, also the lawsuits against the side effects, and one fatality, if you will, on one of the birth control methods I will be mentioning today. So if that's a trigger for you, now is the time to exit. But I already disclaimed it quite a lot already, so I don't know if you're still here, but The first birth control method I have on here is the birth control arm implant, Nexplanon, Implanon. Those are the common ones. I've seen a million commercials for it. If you've seen Vanessa Hudgens on her, you know, promotion of Nexplanon, she's been promoting it. She's probably an ambassador for them. I don't know. I've just seen her in the commercials more than once. It is 99% effective and it is low maintenance. And the arm implant goes in, I believe, the right arm, if not mistaken, on which arm. I don't know if it makes sense which one, but I've heard a lot it's the right arm, and it just stays there, it just vibes there, you know, and releases, you know, the hormone to prevent you from getting pregnant, should last roughly up to 3 years. Honestly, we're mainly focusing on the lawsuits and negative side effects on the lawsuits for these methods. The second birth control out there, the most popular one that I am also a victim of, is the IUD, intrauterine device. I don't know why I thought there was another U in it, but intrauterine device. It is 99% effective, also low maintenance. It is a T-shaped plastic device that goes up your pussy, basically all the way into your uterus. And a string hangs down and it goes past your cervix and you can feel the fish line. TMI, but yes, I do check for it as every single day because I'm very paranoid about it. And then the hormonal one, it varies. It's supposed to be 3 to 7 years, depending on the brand that you get. And then the non-hormonal one, which is your girl, me, Paragard, she's up for 10 to 12 years. So, okay, I did not need, and I don't want to hear the zoomies. Okay, I don't know if y'all heard that, but I heard that. Our third birth control contraceptive is the birth control pill, which is 91% effective, technically 99% if used on schedule as designated. I remember Planned Parenthood really emphasized that if you take it on time, it is fully effective. If you were kind of off with it at times, it's 91% effective, and you're supposed to take it daily. It's like the most common form of birth control that everyone knows about. And the last and final birth control that there is that I will be mentioning today is the birth control shot. 94% effective, and it's used every 3 months to avoid pregnancy. And without further ado, we talk about the history behind the birth control arm implant. Let's take it back to the 1940s. So, silicone is found to be compatible with the human bodies. It's a new discovery in the 40s. 1964, Judah Folkman, he's a medical scientist and another medical professional, published their study on how a plastic rod such as the Nexaplon, like not officially called Nexaplon at that time, but it was going to present day what it is. It was like going in that direction, if that makes sense, going through that route of testing and just experimenting with how many rods can be done. And it can be like a plastic rod, so it can transport drugs or utilize drugs in the body. In 1966, P.J. DeZook and B. Cook published their studies on how it is possible for a rod to transport drugs in the body or under the skin. And then 1990, Hendrik Dinesh, I don't really know where these people are from, the medical professionals, but he invented the polymeric material which releases the contraceptive agents for a long time under the skin, which is kind of what we see in Nexplanon and Implanon to present day. If you want to look that up, it's patent number 508-8505, and it was filed on June 21st, 1990. Gemini season. No, I'm kidding. Anyways. And then 1998, Implanon became the first single rod implant, so just one rod of plastic implant with the hormone I made sure to go over the pronunciations. Okay, here we go. Oh my god, how do I pronounce it? Give me a minute, you guys. Just give me a minute, because your girl, she's going through it. She's experimenting today. Honestly, I thought I had all the pronunciations. I went through it before I began. I guess I didn't. Who knows? But my point still stands. I'm going to say it. I'm going to have Google say it for you. All right?
Adenogestrel.
So, 1998, Implanon became the first single rod implant with the hormone endogestrel, which was different from the previously used hormone levogestrel. The more you know. So, and then there were a few issues with it already. and there were still like some bugs and tweaks they had to fix. And then 50% of unplanned pregnancies happened and occurred even with the implant due to no insertion or expelling after the insertion. We'll get into expelling in a little bit because I know it very well. Some could not feel the implant since it was buried deep within their skin in the arm. Or underneath the skin. Nexplanon was then introduced to hopefully address the issues that was going on with Implanon. Present day, there are still issues in lawsuits. And now we have the complications. Complication of the studies conducted for the arm implant. So the two main companies of the birth control arm implant are Organon Pharmaceutical Company and Merck Pharmaceutical Company. They are partners. And on September 2003, Organon submitted Implanon, the arm implant, for approval while in Indonesia and selected parts of Europe had been approved for its usage. Clinical studies revealed that there were irregularities in the study. Indonesian studies were removed due to significant good practice violations, aka levels of fraud. Two other additional studies occurred in Europe and also found violation of significant good practice and advised European officials, advised European officials to revisit the Implanon label and edit and update the new safety and efficiency concerns. Basically, they still submitted to... They basically submitted to compromising studies back and forth, and the FDA continued to say no until 2006. So January 2006, Organon submitted another application for approval, and it was going back and forth until July of 2006. And then July 2006, the FDA approves the letter. It's unclear as to why and what led to that, but Implanon was finally officially approved in the US. And then half of the US, this is actually really important to know about the study about Implanon for the arm implant. So half of the US participants dropped their clinical study. And honestly, I'm only using my, just my bare minimum understanding of statistics when it comes to conducting research. So 1,000 women from different places around the world were part of this study. 330 of them were from the US. I have failed math more than once, okay? There is no reason you should believe me. This is now I am inserting a personal opinion. When you take a statistic class, most of the time, the study needs to be over 1,000, especially if you're doing something like this, right? That is basically It's like N. Like if you take in a statistics class, like N, the whole study has to be very big. And then there's also like ways to conduct it if it's lower than or more than a certain amount. 1,000 is pretty solid, but honestly, for something like this, especially important research, other than birth control studies, you gotta have a bigger amount of N, especially if only 330 of them were from the US. That's just a personal, opinion that I've noticed with statistics, but furthermore, let's get to the actual statistics of it. So the stats were 48.8% dropped the study early than intended. 36.1% dropped because of the regular bleeding that comes with the arm implant. 11% dropped due to bleeding irregularities, such as bleeding heavily or more frequently and or spotting. 6.1% dropped because of their, emotion imbalance, such as like laughing at random times and crying. It was a very weird statistic, that one I read. That one was a very weird one. 2.4 dropped out due to depression. 2.3 dropped it due to weight gain. However, 25% of all of the subjects in the study suffered headaches. Not just the U.S. Not the U.S. of, not the U.S. candidates and participants. 25% of all subjects in the study suffered headaches. 14.5% suffered vaginal infections. 13.7% total experienced weight gain. And now we move to the lawsuits and settlements for Nexplanon. Like I said, as mentioned, the top two pharmaceutical companies responsible for this are Organon and Merck. Very weird name if you want to look them up. I will be putting their lawsuits and information on that in the description. So if you want to check that out, if you want to check out the pharmaceutical companies mentioned in this episode, believe me, I would love to sit down and spend my whole day just researching how fucking shitty Big Pharma is. Anyways, lawsuits were filed against the two companies for, and these are also like side effects of the Implanon, or no, Nexplanon. However, the lawsuits were filed against the two companies for increased risk of blood clots, deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, heart attacks, and strokes. Although they are not class action lawsuits, there was not a large amount of a group of people against these companies. However, Nexplanon lawsuits were filed by the National Injury Help for individual and specific lawsuits. So many states were included. It was like Alabama, Arkansas, California, Alaska, Colorado, like a bunch of different states, right? And now we move on, you guys. I know that was kind of fast, but I did try to find a lot more research on the Nexplanon. And I did find a lot. I was just kind of speeding through because we got three other ones. And I really want to hyper-focus on the copper IUD one. And just as a whole copper, I mean, as in a whole IUDs. So I did research on my birth control, which you would think I would have done prior to getting it, but no. You girl didn't. And I will, I mean, I didn't because I didn't really think I had to, because there aren't any other birth controls out there that I would really consider, except maybe the hormonal IUDs. Like, I don't really fuck with the other ones. I'm not down to get an arm implant. And by the way, I did do research prior to getting any form of birth control, before I even had this podcast, because I considered birth control pretty early on in my college life. I just never went through with it, and I just never understood when would be the right time to do it. And then I hit my 20s and I was like, yeah, I think now is the time to do so more than ever. My personal recommendation is get on birth control before you have a partner, so your body gets accustomed during that time. And when you do find a partner you really love and care about, and they love and care about you the same way, then you're pretty much like set to go. You already have a birth control that's already accustomed to your body, understands your body, and is already in there, or your body's used to doing the daily intake of the pill, the 3 month shot, or the IUD that just kind of vibes up in there for a really long time, or the arm implant. You know, you got to recover from the birth controls. You know, you got to recover and then let your body just kind of shift and get used to it. That's just a personal preference for me. Before we get into the copper IUD information and just IUD as a whole and everything else. Since I am here talking about birth control as someone that is on it, honestly, I don't really come prepared with like a personal experience. I do want to save my personal experience for when I have it for a full year. I feel like that'll be a time where I can finally fully reflect on what it's like. Currently on it, it is day 4, and I honestly feel very fucking tired. It sucks. I'm in pain. Nothing like ibuprofen. Well, not ibuprofen. More like, hard drugs like acetamone, Fenmin, or just like the Tylenol, that thing. Basically, it's really a lot. I think today, TMI, but mentioning blood right now. I was having a very heavy flow today, at least like in the afternoon, morning, just wouldn't stop fucking bleeding. It was kind of annoying, and I knew that would happen. You know, I signed up for that on purpose. But yeah, it's a really tough life sometimes, you know. It's very exhausting. It does take a lot out of you. I am bleeding more than usual. Like, I really am. Like, my period before my copper IUD was 4 to 5 days, no more than that, and the second day would be the heaviest day, and heaviest would be just like a tampon, maybe 4 at least. If I'm home, maybe a solid like 3. If I was out, maybe just like 3 as well. not continuously doing it every, you know, few hours. But regardless, you know, it's frustrating, it's difficult, it's exhausting. Luckily, I will be going to bed pretty early tonight, or not really, since I am not even halfway done with this episode, but very important information regardless. I definitely want to do a more in-depth analysis of my birth control journey, if that makes sense. But like I said, I did previous research on other women that were on YouTube posting their experiences online, which, by the way, I value so deeply. Like, trust me, I don't care what anyone says. Your opinion and your experience on a certain thing, on anything, whether it's birth control, whether it's experience with, you know, a certain product that's very popular on the market, like any of those things, like your experience will be valid. Like, I had a phase before I started waxing that I just like would YouTube day and night for months, just understanding every way of waxing, whether it's sugar wax, whether it was regular wax, whatever it may be. And I did that with birth control contraceptives. And honestly, the one that caught my eye the most was the IUD from day one, only because they had a non-hormonal option and it was the only option on the market. I literally was on like, I was on Hulu or something, watching one of my favorite TV shows, and then Hulu has ads. I have the student subscription, so Ad Central. And I got this ad, which was really funny, of like Anna Murphy, and she was like talking about Phexxi, like this new birth control that's like only meant for like preventing pregnancy, and you're supposed to do it like a couple hours before you have sex or whatever. And I was like, you see, why didn't that come out when I got my birth control? Why didn't that come out? There's just like so many things evolving. Even when I was doing research behind and on birth control of all kinds, Phexxi was not even out, not even in process maybe. Like, it's so new and so amazing what can be come up with, you know, what can be brought to the market. But there's always going to be downsides. There's always going to be something to poke at, which is honestly, I'm a firm believer in not always shooting down every idea. But honestly, when it comes to health, and especially vaginal health and health that can impact not just your uterus but quite literally the rest of your body, there's a reason to be nitpicky and critical and criticizing all the details possible. I saw women that were complaining about their IUD, why they couldn't do it, and there was also women that loved it, and there was also women that hated the pill, and there was some women that never really saw or experienced positive experiences with the pill. And it's always varying, you know, it depends on the person, it depends on your medical history, it depends on your genes, it depends on like what runs in your family, what doesn't, like all so many impacts. So many possibilities as to why you may or may not be able to adapt to a certain birth control. It's crazy. It's really crazy. And the copper IUD, man, she's a lot. Even though she's low maintenance, even when I'm off my period, I still cramp. Like the weeks after it, like a week after it maybe, I feel totally dead. Because you realize you lose a lot of blood. Quite literally, you lose a lot of blood. I'm not kidding. Like, I'm so serious. Like, today, I looked in the fucking toilet bowl. Boom. Blood everywhere. I was in the shower today. I was oozing, yo. I was oozing. TMI, but honestly, why are you gonna get grossed out? It's literally just menstruation. Like, it's just gonna happen. It's just the way I suffer. Women suffer on a daily basis. Or at least monthly basis. So, without further ado, let's get into the history behind the copper IUD. So, in 1962, Dr. Jack Lipps developed and inserted the first Lipps loop. It was a plastic device, inserted tube, and was made into different sizes eventually. A string, like present day, was still attached to it and was used like the present day IUD just for easy removal. And then 1967... Howard Tatum and Jamie Zipper, interesting last name, introduced the reversible and long-term contraceptive. 1970, Dr. Antonio, very interesting last name, Shmunga Gamenga came up with a T-shaped device with prostagen, or, oh no, prostagen. Oh my God, can I just say something the right way? Do I have to have Google say this for me? I think it's progesterone, something like that. Oh God, I just can't. When you think you know things, here we go. Google's gonna say it for me.
Progesterone.
Yes, progesterone, that one. So Dr. Antonio, can't say his last name, came up with a T-shaped device with progesterone and the semi-permeable capsule, which was approved by the FDA for 1 year on the market until the early 2000s. So, 1971, the A.H. Robbins Company, yet another pharmaceutical enterprise. Are we surprised? I'm not. I know you're not. Released an IUD called the Delkin Shield onto the market. It only lasted for 3 years on the market until it was removed for terrible designing and faulty designing because the removal string, like the string that hangs out of the cervix, could harvest bacteria in the uterus, which could, and also was not sealed at the other end, which caused the bacteria buildup in the uterus. This also, this made pelvic inflammatory disease more susceptible and possible and can lead to infertility at the end of the day. Over 300K lawsuits filed against A.H. Robbins, which led to the company filing for bankruptcy. I mean, I love a good bankruptcy against Big Pharma. That's just me, but you know, whatever, I guess. The 1970s to the 1980s, the IUD market was not doing so hot. But the only IUD that stayed on the market was the progesterone T-shaped IUD that was still still on the market, still being, you know, promoted. But it was, like, out of the all other IUD devices, the progesterone one stayed and was intact. Now we see in 1988, copper T380A, aka the Paragard, which I have currently vibing up in there, introduced to the market. It was 4 years running, but as new data and studies came out and presented itself on how long it was effective for, it ended up becoming more effective and onto the market as advertised for 10 years. 2001, Mirena is now available in the US, accessible. And then January 2013, low-dose hormonal IUD such as Skyla by Bayer Pharmaceutical Company was approved by the FDA. Now, you guys are going to need to remember Bayer Pharmaceutical Company. Y'all are going to need to remember that name because it comes up a lot in this episode today. And oh, the scandals they have in this one little company of Big Pharma. Oh, you need to know about it, honey. Oh, you need to know. And so we present the Mirena hormonal IUD lawsuits and issues. We're now going to the hormonal one, just for your big noggin to register. Copper IUD of any brand, which is primarily Paragard, is a non-hormonal intrauterine device to avoid and prevent pregnancy. Its side effects are heavy bleeding, heavier cramping, and overall just preventing pregnancy. That's pretty much all it is. And I am currently experiencing it as I speak. So I know it's true. I'm currently going through it myself. And then the Mirena and other brands like Skyla, those two are the hormonal intrauterine devices, the IUD, which are, you know, I actually am considering Mirena at some point in my life because I would like to, or Skyla, because I would like to not have a period for once in my fucking life. And it just sounds so appetizing when you think about it, you know? You're like, huh, easier periods, easing my period cramps, no period altogether eventually. Sounds like a fucking deal. You're wrong. You're done. You wish. Honestly, like I said earlier, these are just rare possibilities, but they do exist and they do occur. So without further ado, the Mirena hormonal IUD lawsuits and issues. So like I said, you gotta remember Bayer Pharmaceutical. Bayer Pharmaceutical Company had lawsuits against them because of the Mirena side effects. Bayer has been accused of hiding the side effects and making a faulty IUD. Women blame Bayer for organ perforation, which is puncturing of the other organs, dislodging from the uterus, which is basically just migrating into another part of the body that isn't the intended area of the uterus, causing pressure buildup in the skull. You would think that doesn't correlate, like an intrauterine device and a skull pressure. I don't know. Trust me, I didn't understand it, but we got into why. So, in August of 2018, Bayer roughly estimated that the settlement would be around 4.6K claims, two large groups of marina cases, and federal multi-district lawsuits were located in New York and New Jersey, but primarily in New York and other parts of the states. One included an organ puncture or perforation lawsuit. The other one was a pseudotumor cerebri lawsuit, and then one active lawsuit in New Jersey for another puncturing of the uterus or other body organs, and migration, which is the migrating of the IUD into another part of the body. I've seen x-rays of migration. Basically, I eventually want to do recordings of the actual podcast where I can film myself, but I don't have the ability to do that yet. Just bear with me. But here's my thing. If you know about the female anatomy whatsoever, and men, I'm talking to you, all right, you need to know. The uterus, very complicated specimen, yet a beautiful, beautiful specimen at that. Love having her. She just beats my ass sometimes. Basically, the IUD goes very far up, and it's meant to sit in your uterus. Just vibe there for however long you want to keep it there and however long you're intended to have it for. And the string hangs down your cervix, so when women do the monthly checkup, or I like to do it weekly, you have to feel the string, not too much or not too little. And if you don't feel the string, it's not really such a big deal. Just if you go days without feeling it for a while, like I said, I'm not a medical professional. It's just my experience. But if you go a couple days without feeling it, then there's something up. If you feel too much of the string, that's also something sus. If you feel anything other than the string itself, you are in deep trouble and you should go see your gyno or your healthcare provider at that point. I already had my IUD expel once. Knock on wood, that never happens to me again. But regardless, migration does happen, and in the x-rays, it shows that the IUD, an intrauterine device, basically is supposed to sit in the middle, right smacked in the middle in your uterus. It's not supposed to move, it's not supposed to shift, and rarely does it ever, but the times it does, it goes into other parts. And if you see the x-ray, it's intended, and also I had an ultrasound of my Paragard IUD done twice. On the first time I got it inserted, and the second time I had the follow-up, the 1 month checkup. And my new OBGYN, and I can tell you the experience of my first OBGYN, the second one, she made sure it was in place both times. Bless her heart, I would die for her. I love her so much. But yes, also, if your OBGYN does not perform an ultrasound on you, I would say that's my personal preference and personal best interest to run and find another OBGYN right away. Not even kidding, I have, and believe me, it is from experience. I say it with love and I say it with care. Please get an ultrasound the second you get an IUD. I'm not kidding. If your OBGYN is not doing that, they are sus. They are very sus for doing that. Just saying, personal preference, maybe not, some people don't really care about that. Some other women be like, no, I trust it. Don't. Believe me, you need to check. Like, you need to make sure that it's there and doing its job. And so migration, like I said, in the x-ray, the IUD is supposed to be smacked in the middle of the uterus. And then the migration is when it starts shifting out of the frame of the x-ray. It's not in the middle anymore. It's like shifting to the right or the left or anywhere other direction that's not meant to be. Very scary, and I do not wish that upon any woman that's on an IUD. Knock on wood for me. But here we go, the migration and organ punctures lawsuits. So if you want to look this up, I think it's MDL 2434. of a woman claiming that it punctured her organs, the Marina IUD. Lawsuit stated how Bayer failed to not properly advise women on how the device can cut through organs. Similarly, migration lawsuit states how the device shifted outside the uterus, like I mentioned, which requires surgical removal of Marina. Women who have filed these lawsuits stated how they have had numerous surgeries in order to fix Marina complications. Unfortunately, as I was reading, a lot of IUD complications, knock again on wood, because oh god, even talking about this makes me so nervous, but it needs to be said, you need to get surgery sometimes to remove them, because they can get lost, they can get punctured in other parts of the uterus, or it can puncture your other organs. It can also puncture both. It is very scary to think about. It is also very scary to even just fathom, but it does happen. It has happened. It's just important to know. I don't really want to scare anyone. It's just the way it is. It's just how scary it can be, and it honestly sucks for me to even say it on it. I'm currently on it myself, and it's scary. But it's good to know that these things exist, and sometimes if you feel like it's time to get it removed, maybe that is your final sign to get it removed. So the final verdict was on September 2019, Bayer offered $12 million roughly to settle the cases, and on April 2019, only one case is currently still pending. And then the pseudotumor cerebri injury lawsuits, aka false brain tumor, and blame the hormone Levengen. Okay, we're gonna have Google say this one too, because I don't want to pronounce it wrong again. Just listen.
Levonorgestrel.
Yeah. And then basically the false brain tumor comes from the hormone levangesterol. This hormone can cause an abnormal elevation of the cerebral spinal fluid in the skull, aka which can form the false brain tumor. And Bayer has been accused and filed for a lawsuit because they failed to not fully explain how the hormone works inside the body. And then final verdict lawsuit still pending as of April 2019. And then April 2018, people that filed the lawsuits and the defendants went over the scientific problems with surrounding Marina. There's still a discovery in process, still going on, still pending. It's just a work in progress at this point. The New Jersey Bayer lawsuits, July 2018, there was a 1.8K active cases. May 2018, Bergen County Superior Court Judge Rochelle L. Harse dismissed a large majority of the cases due to law that prescribed a period of limitation for bringing certain specific types of legal action. Honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. I would ignore that part. I tried my best to look that part up in legal terms. I'm not a lawyer, clearly, as you can obviously tell. That part just got me mixed up. If you want to look into that, you can look up the May 2018 Bergen, Bergen County Superior Court with Judge Rochelle, Rachelle, like the letter L, period, Harse, Harz. Or you can type in the New Jersey Bayer lawsuits, May 2018. Honestly, I feel like that's a little bit easier if you want to read more into it. And I do have the links and will be linked in the description if you would like to check it out. And now we get into my lovely anxiety-filled Paragard non-hormonal lawsuits and issues. Wow. I will just preface with this, though. The actual Paragard IUD non-hormonal IUD lawsuits are quite actually recent. I actually first found out about any form of complications with the Paragard IUD very recently. I would say very mid-2021. I'm not kidding. Like, it's very recent I've seen this. And I did find out about it on Reddit with the birth control subreddit that a lot of women are on. And I use that for a lot of self-reflection, if you will. It's just a comforting area and a comforting space to be when you're going through it and stuff. Especially if you're getting on birth control for the first time, it's very scary. And having a group of people, whether it's online or not, is very helpful to have and very comforting to know. So I did find out, and in that, research, or someone posted the article about it, how there are complications with removing the IUD itself. With that being said, before I get into the actual, you know, lawsuits and cases and issues with it, I am actually on my second IUD at the moment. My first one did expel, which means it was kind of pushing out by itself, basically like rejecting, kind of. I would say, yeah, the best way to say it is just like rejecting and forcing its way out of my body slowly but surely. Also, I have a theory, clearly not proven, that my original OBGYN placed it incorrectly, a faint memory, and I don't really want to go back to that, truthfully. But the second IUD I'm on is currently fully in place, working. I have two ultrasounds to prove it, and my new OBGYN is a godsend. So bless her heart, knock on wood that ever happens to me again. But yes, it is possible for it to expel. And TMI, but when I was getting the first one out, nothing occurred, God forbid, and I hope that the next time or any time I decide to get it removed, it does not occur. I will say and agree that it is a very sensitive device. It is very movable, if that makes sense. I would say flexible is the best word to describe it, because when it came out of me, the first one, it was like since it is a T-shaped, the first part of the T was angled. It was shifted like to the right a little bit when it came out. All of it did come out, which is a big blessing. But it was shifted and angled at a weird way, because it is coming out of you. When it is expelling out of you, it is pushing its way out of your body, slowly but surely. One false move, it would have been over for me, like truly. And luckily I had a medical professional take it out for me, and everything went well. Hope that the next time I decide to get it removed, it's all good and fun times, and all of it comes out. But unfortunately, that's not for some people with these cases and lawsuits. So basically, the lawsuit contains of those who were injured at the hands of Paragard IUD T380A. The two big pharma companies are Teva and Cooper Surgical. And the issues that can occur is 1, breaking off mid-removal or during the removal process, or it is embedded in the uterine cavity. Although Paragard IUD lawsuits are quite new, like I mentioned, they're very new. There's still research to be done on this. There's still like not so many lawsuits, or, you know, over 1,000 lawsuits against the pharmaceutical company, but they are being sued at the moment. But I did see it on Reddit and I was very alarmed of how it could happen. But yes, a woman experienced a device breaking and almost needing surgery to remove it. That's what I remember from the article I read on Reddit. Someone posted the link about it and they were like, hey, if you're on the copper IUD, I would recommend reading this. I was like, okay, bet, I'll take a look at it. And this woman basically said how pieces of the IUD broke off and she almost needed surgery to remove it. Usually when that happens, the doctor basically tells you to let it come out itself, kind of, and sometimes it's not always a lucky, you know, successful, like, you know, removal, and sometimes it does lead to surgery and needing to remove it. Lawsuits have stated how the device broke upon removal. Other lawsuits filed that Paragard broke during the removal and leaving pieces of the IUD in their bodies, sometimes, like I said, needing surgery to be required to remove it all, and sometimes more than one surgery needed to remove it all in totality. One of the lawsuits filed by a woman named Georgia Bowers. So in 2017, in January, she received her Paragard, and in September of 2017, she revisited her doctor to have it removed. The ultrasound that she had on herself revealed that the device was incorrectly positioned, and Bowers's doctor did everything they could to remove it. However, one of the arms was missing, and Bowers's doctor could not remove it at all. So in September 2020, she filed for, oh no, she filed against Teva and Cooper Surgical Pharmaceutical Companies. The lawsuit filed by Carly Treadway, another woman who received the Paragard IUD in 2008. She received her Paragard IUD in 2018. She wanted it removed. She went to her doctor and the doctor followed the instructions on how to remove her IUD properly and safely. But one of the T-shaped arms stayed and unfortunately did not come out. And it stayed in her uterus. And Treadway's doctor removed the missing arm via histocropery. I'm going to have Google say this one. I've heard this word before. Just can't remember how to pronounce it. We're going to have Google say it for you. I'd rather have Google say it for you than me.
Hysteroscopy.
Hysteroscopy. That. She removed it by hysteroscopy a month after. And as September 2020, Treadway filed against Teva and Cooper Surgical. It is not officially, like, as a whole, a proper lawsuit. It is an issue, and, like, these lawsuits are real, and they did occur, but they're not as frequent at the moment, but I feel like with time they will be. Teva and Cooper Surgical are still being sued for the shit they've been, you know, dealing with their Paragard. However, Paragard has not been recalled yet, so there's that. And now we move on to the birth control pill and the history behind it. So let's do like a speed thing. It's almost an hour in. I want to get this through and I want to get in the information. So, history of birth control pill. In 1916, Margaret Sanger, the Planned Parenthood founder, opens her first birth control clinic in the U.S. And it was illegal and it shut down pretty fast, but still, we got a sense of how important and necessary birth control and Planned Parenthood as a foundation was necessary, even in the 1900s. So it's very important to know about that. Then fast forward to the 1950s, Sanger began funding research and development for the birth control pill as we know today, slowly but surely, just trying to get an understanding of what could possibly, you know, happen. Like, the world is your oyster when it comes to the medical world. So anything is possible. The 1960s, the FDA approves the pill as a form of contraceptive orally. In 1965, Planned Parenthood wins the U.S. Supreme Court that made contraception legal for married couples. And finally, in 1972, the U.S. Supreme Court legalizes the pill for all women. Now, we fast forward to the YAWS, which is a type of birth control, hormonal birth control oral. Lawsuits and issues. So YAWS, it's like YAZ, simple. YAWS in 2006 was introduced and the FDA had responded on the side effects. In 2008, the FDA targeted Bayer, once again, that pharmaceutical company that we saw and heard of, for their TV commercials on YAWS, the oral birth control that didn't fairly warn women about the serious dangers, even fatal side effects of the YAWS oral birth control. Fast forward to 2012, the FDA states how the birth control pills with, I'm going to have Google say this magic word because I don't want to butcher it. I'm sorry, but I am not good at words. So here's the drug.
Drospirenone.
The 2012 FDA states how birth control pills with drospirenone can further risk for blood clots. The FDA has not issued a YAWS recall. Many lawsuits against Bayer's YAWS birth control claimed how Bayer continuously failed to tell women the truth and serious side effects of the YAWS birth control. 2013, Bayer paid over $750 million to settle in the 3,000 worth of lawsuit cases against YAWS that involved injuries such as deep vein thrombosis, which is blood clotting forming in a deep vein, and then pulmonary embolism, blockage of an artery, which is pretty fatal if you ask me. YAWS lawsuits again. Bayer has gone as far as to wrongful deaths. That's how far it went. I didn't get a lot of information on the death part, but it did go as far as to have the family of their loved one that passed from YAWS to file against Bayer. And now we move on to the final end of this birth control episode. The birth control shot history. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't find too much background on the depo, what's it called? Depo-Provera birth control shot. But what I did find, 1967, it became available. That's all I could find, truly. And then I found a study, which I might not even include because it was involving like beagles, like the dog, and specific kind of monkeys. And then other researchers were saying how that's not a valid, you know, study because it didn't even involve humans, let alone women, let alone people that bleed every month, and let alone people that can get pregnant. So it was not a very valid study. I will say, though, to roughly sum up the study, I guess you can say, the death of three dogs in the study was due to drug-induced diabetes, and then similar with the results of the monkey test. But yes, it was dismissed because of the study, how it did not have any study on humans, let alone humans with a uterus. So it was kind of a really weird study that I read. I was like, that's kind of not valid, kind of, like, not trying to debunk your science, my guy, but that doesn't seem pretty accurate. But roughly in 1992, the FDA finally approves Depo-Provera. Now, there has been a lot of back and forth with Depo-Provera. I believe Pfizer has promoted and come out with Depo-Provera, some other companies, pharmaceuticals. However, it can't be all goody two-shoes. It has to have a sadness to it, unfortunately. And so, there are so many articles I have on here that y'all are going to have so much fun reading about. If you so choose to. But, wow, listen. The Depo-Provera lawsuit. So, if you don't know, the shot is every 3 months that you get it injected. And it is a synthetic form of the hormone progestin. And many patients have experienced several different complications receiving the medication and the Depo-Provera shot. And one of the side effects is headaches, but they also may indicate a severe complication, such as I mentioned, the pseudo tumor cerebri, which is the false brain tumor. And it can mimic the brain tumor apparent, or at least, yeah, it occurs in intracranial pressure increases with the apparent cause, and the symptoms can mimic a brain tumor, which, like I said, is a false brain tumor. It's very, like, it's really hard to say. I couldn't find a lot too much on the Depo-Provera lawsuit. They're pretty much like all of these as a lawsuit are all very much the same. They're all very much still occurring. They have occurred, like the pseudo tumor cerebri has occurred in more than just one of these lawsuits listed aside from the shot. Like I said, I couldn't find like specific cases like I did with the other ones, but that was like the common one, the pseudo-tumor cerebri. I hope that this has been educational. I think that I will wrap it up there. Like I said, I will be including all the sources I use and found and looked into in my description if you guys want to check out further info, if you want to read about it yourselves. I'm very passionate about birth control, as you obviously can tell, but I'm also very passionate of making birth control accessible and very safe for everyone that uses it for other reasons aside from preventing pregnancy. If you're a man that listened to this, I honestly, an actual, like, total listen to it, like, from start to finish, I want to say I bless you, and I hope that you honestly realize that this is very much life or death, that women and a lot of people that have periods and experience that and experience uterus and having all of that And I hope that you continue to fight for them and continue to advocate for safe and accessible and effective birth control, hormonal or not. They're all very important and they're all very necessary, regardless of how many lawsuits there have been. There may have been a lawsuit for one person, but also it could have saved someone's life for another. It's very hard to say. We can't hate on birth control because of, a certain couple thousand of lawsuits on the line. They're very rare still. I'm not going to dismiss lawsuits and deaths of birth control victims, but also it's really hard to not advocate for birth control. It's really difficult not to. There are so many positives in it. And honestly, take it with a grain of salt, There's so many layers to this. Like I said, for the millionth time, and you're probably tired of me saying it, I am not a medical professional. But I do enjoy reading into, issues within women and problems that we go through on a daily basis, such as birth control. It's a very difficult time sometimes, and to really think about how expelling happens a lot when it comes to an arm implant or any insertion of any kind of birth control, such as an IUD or an arm implant. It is a device that is going inside of you for quite a long time, not like a couple months or even a couple days, weeks. Like, it's going in there for years. And it's a very dangerous game to play, knock on wood, for all the people that are on IUDs and implants or whatever birth control they are on. Please know that this is a safe space for that, if that matters at all. And I'm very passionate about it and I take it very seriously. And I see the value in all of birth control, all of methods. They're all very valuable and they're all someone's godsend. I just know it. Me personally, I would very much like to have more options, and I know there's going to be more out there in the future, and I hope that the women in the future have endless options. I'm talking like 200,000 options out there, and that it's fully developed and it's ready to be used and ready to be on the market and advertise safely and with the full reveal of side effects. Bayer Pharmaceutical, I'm talking to you. But yeah, I think that I can wrap up with that. Like I said, birth control is a very essential necessity for millions of people. Millions, millions, and millions, and millions. However, it is hard to realize that all form of birth control can be dangerous and can be fatal. It's really dangerous, and honestly, it's just really sad to think about. It really is. But without further ado, I will be signing off, my fellow humans. Please take care of yourselves. And remember that you're going to be okay. And we're going to get through this, my fellow birth control baddies. Oh my God, think of it. Oh my God. Birth control baddies. There you go. But I will see y'all on the next one. I love you all and take care. Bye.